The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Despite overwhelming odds, in some areas, Russian forces are being pushed back. For residents of cities like Mariupol, daily life has become death. With each week, a frustrated Russian army has increasingly sought to grind down Ukrainian morale and the very fabric of Ukraine itself. And as Western arms pour in, the country's president has sought to get the message out of the devastation caused by the Russian invasion.
Come in the name of peace. Come with Ukrainian symbols to support Ukraine, to support freedom, to support life. Come to your squares, your streets. Make yourselves visible and heard. Say that people matter, freedom matters, peace matters, Ukraine matters.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Powerful message, right? I love that. He says, come to your squares and your streets. Make yourself visible and heard. Say that people matter. That freedom matters, that peace matters, that Ukraine matters. That was, of course, Volodymyr Zelensky. He said that in English during a video address and, of course, speaking to the world. And this guy has been brilliant, just on a very subtle note. Not only has he addressed the legislatures of nations all across the world, but he has won the hearts, I think, of the people of the world and masterfully has used television, video, but more than anything else, I think his bravery has really resonated in the hearts of a lot of people. It's a tough situation. Let me give you just a quick update on what's happening over there, because the numbers here to me are staggering. I saw a report earlier today. NATO was estimating that between 7,000 and 15,000 Russian soldiers have been killed since the invasion began on February 24th. 15,000 soldiers. And NATO also said, and this was another number, this is really high, that up to 40,000 Russian troops have been killed, wounded, or taken prison or are missing in Ukraine. That's what a senior military official said. 40,000. So that's a lot. How many are prisoners of war? How many just went missing? I don't know. But NATO's estimating that at least 15,000, 7,000 to 15,000 have been killed since this began. Russia began its invasion with about 190,000 troops, and since that time, it has continued to bring additional troops from Chechnya and Syria and other locations into fight. I was also struck because I had heard that Ukraine is saying that they killed at least six Russian generals. Russia's admitting to one of those. So, you know, again, I try to sort through these numbers to determine what is authentic and what isn't. Today, of course, the president, he met with other world leaders and had this first in a really trio of summits in Brussels focused on pressuring Russia to end the war in Ukraine. They were strategizing as to how that they were going to go ahead and do that. And, you know, this morning, when I spent time with the Lord in prayer, I prayed for the illumination of their conscience, the conviction of their heart, that they would be led by the Holy Spirit to make the right decision. The U.S. government has determined that Russian troops who committed war crimes in Ukraine, they're going to work to prosecute them. They've also promised relief. Here's what the president said today. Give you a little bit of sound from the NATO press conference. Here's President Biden.
And today, I'm announcing the United States is prepared to commit more than $1 billion in humanitarian assistance to help get relief to millions of Ukrainians affected by the war in Ukraine. Many Ukrainian refugees will wish to stay in Europe, closer to their homes. But we've also will welcome 100,000 Ukrainians to the United States with a focus on reuniting families. And we will invest $320 million to bolster democratic resilience and defend human rights in Ukraine and neighboring countries. We're also coordinating with the G7 and the European Union on food security as well as energy security. And I'll have more to say about that tomorrow.
Come from these meetings in the days ahead, I'll try to give you some perspective on it. Of course, the president of Ukraine, Zelensky, he says to the world, to NATO, he said, look, I just want 1% of your planes, 1% of your tanks. When we have all this, you'll have 100% security. He said, I just want you to know that the alliance can still prevent deaths, right, of Ukrainians from Russian strikes, and begging the world for additional support. The president was queried. He was asked about, from a reporter there, about deterrence and if it worked or not. And here's part of that exchange. Listen to this.
Deterrence didn't work. What makes you think Vladimir Putin will alter course based on the action you've taken today?
Let's get something straight. You remember, if you covered me from the very beginning, I did not say that, in fact, the sanctions would deter him. Sanctions never deter. You keep talking about that. Sanctions never deter. The maintenance of sanctions, the increasing the pain, and the demonstration why I asked for this NATO meeting today is to be sure that after a month we will sustain what we're doing, not just next month, the following month, but for the remainder of this entire year. That's what will stop him.
You believe the action today will have an impact on making Russia change course in Ukraine?
That's not what I said. You're playing a game with me. I know. The answer is no. I think what happens is we have to demonstrate the purpose. The single most important thing is for us to stay unified and the world continue to focus on what a brute this guy is.
His point, just one quick thing here. Russia's a serious player. He called him a brute. I think that's a great description for him. I had heard earlier today, it was a Russian spokesperson. They said, look, the Russian Federation is capable of physically destroying any aggressor or any aggressive group within minutes and at any distance. And he noted, how Moscow's nuclear stockpiles include everything from tactical nuclear weapons designed for use on the battlefield, along with, of course, far more powerful nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missiles that can, create even greater destruction. And just to give you a comparison right now between where the president is on this, the threats that we now face, whether or not deterrence, worked or didn't work. Let me just, you heard the president there. I want to go back. You might remember when Kamala Harris, the vice president, before the president left the States to head to Europe, she stopped in Poland. It was last week. I don't know. Time's a blur to me. I think it was last week, maybe a couple days ago for all I know. But here is a comparison between Biden's response about deterrence versus Kamala Harris in Poland. Check this out.
Sanctions never deter. You keep talking about that. Sanctions never deter.
But if you believe Putin has made up his mind, what leverage do you really have? Why not put those sanctions in place now?
The purpose of the sanctions has always been and continues to be deterrence.
So there you have Kamala Harris. We are trying to sanction and trying to deter Vladimir Putin by also sanctioning a lot of oligarchs over in Russia. And I've heard a report earlier today that, you take a $500 million yacht, big deal. They're going to go out and they're going to buy another one. But there are strategies now that might be tightening that stranglehold. Although there was one ex-oligarch who, I think he was on CNN, claimed that the West is making a major mistake. Listen to this.
Out front now, Mikhail Khodorkovsky. He was at one point the top oligarch, the richest man in Russia. And then he took Putin on, championing the opposition. He ended up in prison for 10 years. And he obviously is not in Russia now. Mikhail, thank you so much for being with me. When you mentioned President Biden, he has talked about the threats. He doesn't want World War III. He says it's a real threat. Putin could use chemical weapons in Ukraine. Obviously, there are fears of what he could do with the nuclear arsenal. So far, obviously, he has not even used tactical nuclear weapons, but there are these fears out there. Do you think that they're real fears? Because they are what's holding NATO and the West back.
Well, I believe that actually what we are seeing now is that Western leaders are repeating the same mistake that their predecessors committed years ago with Hitler, when Hitler was very vulnerable back then, when he tried to invade Europe. And that's what his accomplices did admit during the Nuremberg Tribunal. However, what we know is that Western leaders kept saying that they were afraid to aggravate Hitler, and they thought, well, if we are not showing any resistance, then eventually he'll stop. However, that mistake has cost hundreds of millions human lives. Hundreds of millions human lives were lost, and the same mistake is being committed now. Putin will never use nuclear weapons unless he knows he's in safety. And once he's been convinced that, yes, you're safe, then obviously that just triggers him towards that.
So there you have it. Now, what's the solution to this? And I'm going to give you a quick programming note. Tomorrow, you know, we can talk about what happens in Brussels. We can talk about oligarchs. We can talk about sanctions. We can talk about continental ballistic missiles, as we did yesterday with Dr. Peter Pry. We can take a look at the rising cost of food as a result of what's happening, Russia and one of the biggest manufacturers of fertilizers, and Ukraine, one of the biggest exporters of wheat. You know, the Pope is formally inviting every Catholic bishop around the world to join him tomorrow. And he's going to pray a solemn act of consecration of humanity. That's what he's going to do. He's going to consecrate the world and Russia and Ukraine in particular to the Immaculate Heart. And he made this appeal, as you might have already heard. We're going to be covering it live for you tomorrow, starting at noon central. And you can stay with us through it all. We're going to give you live coverage. We're going to be going to the Pope and to the consecration prayer. In his letter that he sent out to the world, the Holy Father lamented just the immense suffering of the war in Ukraine, what it's been doing to people, and how it is indeed threatening world peace. He says, at this dark hour, he says, the Church is urgently called to intercede before the Prince of Peace and demonstrate her closeness to those directly affected by peace. And, of course, he will invoke Our Lady and pray a powerful consecration prayer. Again, that's 6:30 Rome time. It'll be about 12:30 Central time if you are in the Central time zone. Let me grab a quick call here. Ronald's listening in Mountain View, California. Let me bring him on and say hello to him. Ronald, what can we do for you today? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
Roland, good afternoon.
My key point is this. When you point the accusatory finger at anyone, whether it's Putin or Russia or Ukraine, you're doing the work of the devil. To be pointing the finger at anyone does not bring about peace. It is the work of the devil.
Roland, so let me ask you a question. Let me ask you just a quick question to your point. Was John the Baptist, when he called out Herod's immorality, was he doing the work of the devil?
No.
No, and neither am I, sir. War crimes are being committed, and we're seeing what I really believe is an evil aggression. Go ahead, Roland. I'll give you an opportunity to respond.
Okay. We know that Russia is very cautious in driving into the Ukraine. Why? Because many people in the Ukraine are Russian-speaking, and he wants a long-term solution of demilitarizing and neutralizing Ukraine. Now, when you support puppets like Zelensky, who put him there? Yeah. When you support a pro-abort, a LGBTQ hero of the West, what are you doing and what are you thinking about? The Ukrainian people are suffering and dying, and you're egging it on.
I am not egging it on, Roland. I can't believe you can endorse the type of destruction that we're now seeing in the world by Vladimir Putin. I'm not an advocate of any LGBTQ agenda. You know that. I'm a champion of life. You know that. You know that. What you're saying is really a mischaracterization. And if you want to champion Russia, you're entitled to that particular view. Why don't you do what I'm going to do tomorrow, okay? We'll put politics aside, all right? And we'll do what the Holy Father has said, and we will pray. And that's what I've been asking people to do throughout the week, to pray and to fast, right? To pray and fast. Today, I re-echo that. Tomorrow, of course, is a solemnity. We'll celebrate the Annunciation, and we'll participate in what's going to be an extraordinary day of grace. I really do believe tomorrow is going to be absolutely a day that will change the world. And I mean that definitively. And Roland, I know your heart's in a good place. You know, I do. I know that. But let's pray. Let's trust in the grace that will flow tomorrow as Pope Francis calls everyone to join him. And I just want to follow up before I take a quick break here. And we'll talk about the consecration and much more coming up. You know, Father Rocky, who's our chief executive officer here, he had sent out a memo to everybody at the network. And he says, look, unless you have to be, you're in a critical position, I want you to go and spend that time in prayer. Find a church, find an adoration chapel, do something along those lines. Father Rocky and I will be on the air live starting 11 Central, as long as it takes to get through the consecration. It could be 12:30, 1 o'clock. We'll be live at least for 2 hours giving you coverage. Meanwhile, the rest of the staff will be in prayer. I invite you to do the same thing. You know, go to your parish. If you can, spend time in your room and pray. That's what we need to do. We really need to join the Holy Father in heartfelt prayer tomorrow. You know, the Holy Father said in the text of his consecration, he says, this act of consecration is meant to be a gesture of the universal church, right? That means all of us have got to be involved. He says, you know, we're going to lift up to God through the Blessed Mother the cry of pain of those who suffer, and we will implore an end to the violence, and we're going to entrust the future of humanity to Our Lady, the Queen of Peace. So let's do that tomorrow. Maggie had put up yesterday, and she'll put up again for you if it's not there right now on Twitter. The various churches throughout the country, throughout the U.S. diocese, that are participating in the consecration. So check that out, and you can find it there. So just click on the link, and it'll tell you whether or not your diocese and your parish is involved. So if not, call them and get others involved. All right, when we come back, Dr. Paul Kenger will join us. And he did a brilliant piece. This is well worth the read. He went back in time. He looked at John Paul II and all that swirled around that first consecration in light of what's about to happen tomorrow. We'll break it down for you.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Feel like you're trying to make sense of everything happening in the world? We'll connect you to some clarity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, a little Ziggy Stardust there. Well, Bowie, good afternoon. It is good to be here with you today. Appreciate you taking time to join me. You're going to enjoy my next guest, Dr. Paul Kenger, who will be with me in just a second here. I just read his piece today. Just wrote it. It's on the Register. We're going to link over to it for you. Really a wonderful piece. You know, he's the author of a book called A Pope and a President. It's well worth the read. And expert not only on Reagan, but I think John Paul II, he understood him. And he wrote about that consecration. Before we talk about John Paul II's consecration, all that's swirled about it, let me just give you a little historical perspective here, because tomorrow we're going to encounter another consecration, a consecration by Pope Francis, in which he's inviting the entire world and all the bishops and you and me. On four different occasions, various popes have performed consecrations of Russia to the Immaculate Heart. 1917, a little background for you, Our Lady appeared, of course, to the children. There were three of them in Fatima, Portugal, asked them specifically to pray, to do penance, to pray the rosary. And then she asked that Russia be consecrated to her Immaculate Heart. And she asked for the communion of reparations on First Saturday. She says, in order to prevent another world war, because World War I was raging at the time, she asked for the consecration of Russia. And as a result of that, what happened? We know that October 31st, 1941, Pope Pius XII, he consecrated the world to the Immaculate Heart through Mary through a radio address. It wasn't exactly as Our Lady had requested. Later in July in 1952, I think it was the feast of Methodius and Cyril, he issued an apostolic letter directed towards the Russians, entrusting Russia and her people to the Immaculate Heart. So again, we have an entrustment. November 21st, 1964, the third session of the Second Vatican Council, Paul VI, Pope Paul VI, along with the all the bishops present there, they renewed the consecration of the world to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. They actually sent a golden rose to Fatima to commemorate the occasion. But still, that wasn't it. It wasn't until March of 1984, March 25th, tomorrow, the anniversary of that day, that John Paul fulfilled the request. And rather than me unpack why this was fulfilled and why we're now doing another one, let me welcome to the program Dr. Kengor, a great historian, as you know. He is a professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania and a frequent guest here, as well as many major media outlets all across the country. Doctor, good to have you with me. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hey, Drew, good to be with you. Thanks.
You know, I loved your piece. I thought it was both well-researched and always well-written. It was great to have you do that. I know it's up. We're going to link over to it so people can read it. But bring us through it, if you could, because what you focus on here is the role of John Paul II and his consecration and all that swirled around it, what experts said afterwards and much more. But this Friday, of course, as you point out, Pope Francis will perform the consecration of Russia and Ukraine to the Immaculate Heart. And this re-echoes, in some respects, what John Paul did in 84. So if you could, take us through your story.
Yeah, and that's what everybody has in mind with Pope Francis doing what he's doing tomorrow. So he's consecrating to the Immaculate Heart tomorrow Russia and Ukraine, and he said that about 2 weeks ago. And then in the very latest, it appears, final wording for the consecration prayer, Drew, he's also added the phrase humanity, all of humanity as well. So you know, this is intended to cover everything, and some people are wondering, is this also intended to cover for, any doubts that people might now have about whether or not John Paul II did it right on March 25th, 1984? And the reason, so people have always had those doubts. Now, I'm not one of them, say that in the article, and I can go through that. But in March 25th, 1984, he did not explicitly, vocally, out loud, use the word Russia or USSR or Soviet Union. But he did say, you know, all individuals, all people, all nations, everything. I mean, all. And, you know, all and the whole world and everything. I mean, all, whole world and everything, right? So Russia ought to be included. But still, people said, no, you've got to mention Russia explicitly. You've got to mention Russia. You have to mention Russia. He felt that it was effective, that what he did was correct. And I quote in the article, even Sister Lucia herself was consulted on this. She expressed it in two or three different letters, written correspondence. And she also said it to Cardinal Bertone, Tarcisio Bertone, who was the highest ranking Vatican official, Secretary of State. He went to visit Lucia, and this is really quite fascinating. In fact, he has this great comment, Drew, where he said, only heaven knows the secrets in the mind of a nun in her little cell, right? Mm-hmm. She continued to get, we believe, we understand, Bertone understood, these heavenly visits, these visitations. They didn't end for her in 1917. They went on and on and on, and they might have even gone on into the 1990s, into her 90s. She died in, I think it was February 13, 2005, I believe, just a couple of months before John Paul II did. I think she was 97 years old. Yep. So she was getting, she was in communication in some form with heavenly powers on this. And she told Bertone, she said that heaven has accepted the consecration. It has been accepted. You know, heaven approves of it, which, you know, you would think would be kind of the final word on this. But people have since looked back, like right now, and said, well, there's supposed to be this period of peace with Russia, right? You know, Russia is supposed to stop spreading its errors. And here we are in 2022 on the verge of what really could quite possibly degenerate into World War III. I could go through that. I don't think that's an exaggeration. And Russia will be responsible for it if it happens. So maybe even Pope Francis is pausing right now to say, well, you know, let's right, let's do it again. And then this time, let's mention Russia by name. Yeah. Let's mention Ukraine. Let's mention the whole world. Yeah. So does this mean that he's having doubts? Maybe. Maybe. And I'll put it this way. Either way, it can't hurt, right?
Here's the thing. The Vatican has come out. They said, hey, the March 25th, 1984 consecration was valid, as you point out in your article. Even Sister Lucia has said it. So we accept that. Dr. Mark Miravalli, who's a frequent guest of this program at Mariologist, I asked him the same question. I said, well, you know, we see Russia rearing its ugly head again. I mean, look what it's doing. You talk about the destruction of nations or the annihilation of them. These, you know, there's great threats that loom. And he says, you know, the way grace works for us on an individual basis, we have to be receptive to it. We can ignore it. In fact, St. Faustina wrote in her diary about that. There are some souls that God pours grace upon, but it's like water off a rock. And I think Faustina prayed to be a sponge, you know, to soak that up. Mm-hmm. So the same holds true for nations. I mean, did they respond to the grace of that consecration? And is Pope Francis saying, hey, I think things are looming big? Now, this is a personal thought of mine, and I'm going to put a big disclaimer out before because I have no knowledge of this. But I know there are a lot of visionaries today. There are people who still are being visited by the Mother of God or in special communication with heaven, that God talks to these particular souls or sends Our Lady to them, or even Jesus appears to some of them. It wouldn't go beyond me if the Holy Father somehow has been in communication with one of the, maybe these seers had a message for him about what loomed in the future. Maybe that's why he's accelerating things. Because why go back to the consecration? Why go back to Our Lady after even the Vatican says it's been accepted? I think you're right, Doctor. I think there is a strong case for how we could possibly see a third world war. And do me a favor, for those who are listening, and maybe we'll take a few calls, lay that out. What's the scenario you see? And if that's indeed the case, well, we know, as we've seen in the past, the power of consecration, the power of the rosary, and the power of Our Lady's intercession to thwart those efforts. But lay out that case for us, if you would.
Well, and this is why I'm really thrilled with what Pope Francis is doing, because, and by the way, Francis did something like this with war in Syria. When he first came in, it was around 2013, 2014, and I tell you, Drew, it stops. The movement toward war at that time, which looked like it could bring in Russia, possibly the United States, it actually stopped. And that's something that history and many Catholics have not noticed. But in terms of what's going on right now, I think the last time I was on your show, I talked about this. I wrote a piece for Crisis Magazine called Keep Your Eyes on Poland. All it takes is for one NATO country to get attacked by Russia in this. That's all that it takes. Right now, there are 30 countries in NATO. I could give you a long history of NATO, but it started in 1949 with 12 nations. It went up to 15, 16 by the 1950s. Spain was added in 1982. Then nothing happened until 1990s. It went up to 19. They added Poland, Czech Republic, and Hungary. That was after the Cold War, after the Berlin Wall fell. Now, since then, they added seven more from Eastern Europe. These are countries like Slovenia, Albania, and then they even added a few years ago, NATO now has 30 members. Yes, 30. Yep. 30 members. They include countries like North Macedonia, of all things, all right? Now, NATO has something called Article 5, which is a collective security commitment, which says, an attack against one NATO member is considered an attack against all. So if Russia goes into, and Ukraine is not a NATO member, but if Russia goes into Poland, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, any of these countries, we are required by treaty, we absolutely are required to go in there and go to war with the Russians. And Biden has said that. Biden has affirmed that. Yeah, Biden has said we're not going to get in a war in Ukraine because Ukraine's not a NATO member. But if Poland or one of these other countries gets involved, and it increasingly could, people listening, look at a map. Look at the big, long border between Poland and Ukraine. If Russia takes Ukraine and Ukraine becomes part of Russia, then Russia is now right back up against the border of Poland again. So this could easily bring in other countries.
Let me ask you about that point, though, because I had a caller a little bit earlier saying, hey, Russia's invading Ukraine because it doesn't want it to become a member of NATO. They want this buffer, and, you know, they're hoping maybe that Zelensky will come out and say, okay, I'm going to remain neutral and won't become a member of NATO. But to your point, let's just say Vladimir Putin, who clearly could, if he used other means, could conquer Ukraine, would he have ambitions to go beyond that? Would he go into a nation like Poland, which was once part of the empire that he so, you know, desperately desires to reestablish? Do you think he'd go that far, or does he just want the security of knowing that Ukraine, that NATO is not on his doorstep? Although, to your point, Poland's a member of NATO, so it would be on his doorstep.
Right, right. Well, I never thought he would go into Ukraine, which is why all of this is so enlightening and terrifying and shocking. And, you know, Putin gave a speech in April 2005. It's basically the equivalent of the Russian annual State of the Union speech. He gave it to the Duma. And he said that the collapse of the Soviet Union was, quote, the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century, yep, unquote. And we all thought, what does he mean by that, right? What does he really mean by that? And we've debated it ever since. And we said, well, does this mean he actually wants to bring back and reconstitute the old Soviet Union? And most of us said, no. I mean, he doesn't want Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan. Right. And then people kind of in the know would say, well, what about Ukraine? And we would all pause and say, well, he'd probably take Crimea. Would he take some of the Russian portions? I don't know. Maybe. But, you know, he'd never go into, like, Kiev, right? I mean, he would never do that. I mean, he wouldn't want all of Ukraine. He would never do that. Well, there he is. He's doing it brutally and relentlessly right now, and he's got countries on his side, like to the north of Ukraine, Belarus, which is run by an awful dictator, another commie named Lukashenko, who's been in power since 1994. He's another Putin-like character, rigged elections. He's the longest-running, quote-unquote, president of all of Europe right now. So I could see him wanting Ukraine more. And if you look at the historical reasoning that he's given for a lot of these things, and by the way, sadly, Drew, that a lot of Putin apologists in America are giving, right? Well, you know, this goes back to the year 988 and Kiev, Rus, and religion. And everything. So I could see him. Well, you better be careful with that, dude, because if you're going to give him that as his pretext to take Ukraine, you're going to allow him to go into a lot of other places as well.
Yeah,
so I could see him wanting more, and the rivalry between Russia and Poland is white hot and goes back forever and has been especially nasty for the last 102 years, going back to the miracle of the Vistula in 1920 in Poland.
You know, and to that point, if Poland gets involved, the world's involved, we're in World War III, and then we are going to be dealing with a world war unlike anything we've ever seen because of the technology and, of course, the weaponry that we have, too. Never has there been a world war with nuclear weapons like we had today. So let me take
Do we need to go to a break?
No. Go ahead. Respond. And then we'll take a few calls.
One other quick thing that worries me. I hear a lot of people saying, well, look, the Russians are losing right now. Ukraine's doing a good job defending itself. That actually concerns me even more. Look, the Russians always lose. They always get their tails kicked on the battlefield. Always. They have terrible generals. This happens all the time. I'm worried about Putin looking at that and saying, I'm not getting what I want from my commanders. I'm not getting what I want from my army. So I'm just going to have to go even higher. And then at that point, use some sort of WMD, weapon of mass destruction, or do something against the country aiding Ukraine. With the Putin could maybe rightly say, wow, that country's helping them and that's hurting us. I think this guy, cornered and getting desperate, could lash out and do something really hideous. And that, too, could be another scenario that could end up drawing us and NATO and the larger world into it.
Yeah, Biden says the U.S. will respond if Russia uses chemical weapons. Of course, he has low-yield nuclear weapons, too. I postured the idea that he might just send one of those off to some place in Ukraine as a message to the rest of the world. I'm not afraid to use these. And, of course, you can take out satellites. I mean, this thing could get really, really ugly. Let me take a short pause. When we come back, we'll talk more. If you want to join us, my guest today, Dr. Paul Kengor, wrote a great piece on the consecration that John Paul II did. It's on Twitter. We'll get it up. It's called John Paul II's Consecration of Russia. It tells you the whole story, what Sister Lucia said, Cardinal Bertone, so many others who are key players in all that. And it's there at Drew Mariani Show, and I'll link you right to the article. All right, we'll be back with your calls and more right after this. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Yeah, good to be with you today. Thanks for joining me. We're taking a look at, of course, the mounting conflict between Russia and Ukraine and what the possible solution is. Of course, world leaders are meeting in Brussels. Let's pray that they have wisdom and make the right decisions in terms of what the responses should be. And let's pray for Vladimir Putin and the conversion of his heart and protection of those oppressed Ukrainian people. But at the same time, there is a spiritual element to this that undergirds a lot of what's happening on the, in the temporal realm. And that's what's going to happen this Friday at 6:30 local time. It's Rome local time, 12:30 central. The Holy Father will consecrate Russia and Ukraine and the world once again to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. I'm telling you, the torrents of grace on that day are going to flow. We are going to see changes, whether you see it on the 26th. I don't know. I don't expect that. I think grace is like a seed that gets planted. It's got to be watered also with our response, our prayers, our sacrifice. But just as the Iron Curtain collapsed and the USSR dissolved, I too believe we'll see good come from this day. And I'm joined by Dr. Paul Kengor, who wrote a wonderful piece. You can check it out if you want to learn a little bit more about this and the history. It's at our Twitter page, at Drew Mariani Show. It's called John Paul II's Consecration of Russia. And, Doctor, it's good to have you back. Let's go right to the phones if we could. Jim is listening in Medford, New Jersey, and his wife actually met John Paul II. Jim, good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Kengor.
Good afternoon. This was when, I'm sure it must have been before he got shot, because he would come out, I think it was Wednesdays, and walk along the sixth, we called it the sick fence, and greet the people and shake their hands and such. Well, anyhow, my wife was happened to be on that line, and she said to, when he came to her, she said to him, "Holy Father, please consecrate Russia." And he said, I did. And she says, but not like Our Lady asked, with in union with all the bishops. We got to get the bishops. And he grabbed her hands and kind of shook them a little bit, said, "They won't listen to me."
Really? Wow. And wow. Your wife told you
they
that,
won't
huh?
listen to me.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what he told my wife.
That's amazing.
And then he took his thumb and put a cross on her forehead.
That's awesome. I met the Holy Father like that on a couple different occasions, and it's pretty amazing when he comes by, shakes your hand, and does that. You know, there is, of course, division. I'm not going to sugarcoat that, Dr. Kengor, and I think a lot of bishops this time are on board. Yeah, it's a very unique scenario, isn't it, as this war has become televised and people are seeing maternity wards being bombed, we're seeing Mariupol just being turned to rubble, and you take a look at what's happening at large. I think whether you're a civilian, whether you're the clergy, your heart is touched by that. And I think the response is going to be more united than ever this coming Friday. Give me some background, too, if you could, Doc, just on the mindset of Russia. I mean, Reagan had a very different approach to him than I'm assuming Joe Biden does right now. The mind of Vladimir Putin, how do you see him in terms of responding to NATO and where we are right now? Because, you know, you said if he's cornered, he'll be aggressive. I don't know whether you told me this story or somebody said when he was a young boy, he lived in like in a tenement or some apartment building. It was really run down and they had rats. One day he took a stick and he cornered a rat in the corner and was going to poke him with the stick. And that rat turned on him and attacked him and he had to go running. And he learned from that lesson. And that's how he responds. If cornered, he goes on the offensive. Your thoughts on him and the best way to approach him?
Yeah, Rebecca Koffler, who's the author of Putin's Playbook, she writes about that. She wrote a piece on for the New York Post on it, The Cornered Rat. And, that says a lot about his psyche and the fact that he spent 15 years being trained, reared in the KGB. So he is totally a product of the KGB. And in fact, to connect it to what I think it was Jim from New Jersey said, by the way, what he said there is true. That's a really remarkable story.
Yeah.
Putin was in the KGB at the time that John Paul II was shot. John Paul II was shot May 13th, 1981.
In my book, A Pope and a President, as you know, I spend probably more time on the issue of that shooting than anything else. And that's what compelled me to write the book, was I found out that the Reagan administration had learned through Bill Casey at the CIA and a really super close team of a few people. And I first learned this from Bill Clark, who was Reagan's national security advisor. I was Clark's biographer. We learned that it was the Soviets who ordered the hit, the assassination attempt on John Paul II. And it was done, I have learned, and this is one of the main reasons I decided I've got to write all this down, that it was the Soviet GRU, which is military intelligence, that's who carried out the hit on John Paul II through the Bulgarians. And it was given the green light by the head of the KGB, Yuri Andropov. Mm-hmm. So there's no way that Vladimir Putin would have known about this at the time, that he would have been involved. I mean, this was the tightest, highest level thing, most secretive thing that they ever did in the Soviet Union. But he would have lived through it. He would have known about it. And so to connect that with Jim's timeline, if maybe this fits, so that was May 13th, 1981. And it was in when he was recovering at Gemelli Clinic. It was July 18th, 1981. That John Paul II asked to read the Third Secret of Fatima. Yeah. Cardinal Sepper from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith brought him the Third Secret in the original Portuguese text and in Italian. And JP2 read that Third Secret, which talked about a pope being attacked, right? Shot, looks like he's killed, fallen as one of the heirs of communism. And he looked at that, and Cardinal Zivic, his close aide, said all of his doubts immediately fell away. He read that third text, and he said, this is me. This applies to me. This is me. And so he went to Fatima a year later, May 13th, 1982, and that was when he put his bullet from his side into the crown of the Lady of Fatima. Yeah. And it was not that long after that when the bishops did listen. He did his consecration in March 25th, 1984, in communion with all the bishops of the world. Yeah. And I go through that in the article at National Catholic Register. So they finally did listen to him. And he did pull it off, we believe, in March 1984.
Well, let me do this. Look, it's John in New Jersey. He doesn't believe that. John, good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Kingor.
Yeah, good afternoon. Yeah, this is John from Medford, New Jersey. Okay. I wonder why anybody does not perceive that there was no real Russia to be consecrated until now. I mean, if you go back even to the time Our Lady was appearing in Fatima, mm-hmm. and she was asking about Russia, I wondered if there really was a Russia, because soon after that, there was no Russia.
Yeah.
Their king was murdered, and then it became a whole bunch of other states. And when we discuss or talk about the matter of certain companies being disappearing, there were a lot of countries were disappearing into the Soviet Empire.
Yeah.
And so
you have to make a good point. You've got that right. In fact, when Our Lady said it in the summer of 1917, at that point it was strictly Russia. It was just plain Russia. And then there's the miracle of the sun, October 13th, 1917, and about like 13 days after that, the Bolsheviks begin seizing control, and it becomes the Soviet Union, USSR, slowly by adding states through the 1920s, 30s, 40s. Hitler-Stalin Pact, the three mm-hmm. Baltics are added, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, 1939. And then it remains the USSR until basically 1991.
Yeah.
And you're right, now it's Russia again. But then again, Our Lady would have warned, what she warned about was communism in Russia, Bolshevik Russia. Mm-hmm. So that really didn't begin until the Bolsheviks seized it, and it became very, very quickly the USSR. So I think she's talking about Bolshevik Russia, communist Soviet Union.
All right, Todd's in Lexington, Kentucky. Todd, thanks for waiting. Good afternoon. Hey, Todd, are you with us?
Yes, hang on here.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, go right ahead, sir.
Oh, okay, thanks, Drew. I'm kind of curious. You know, Sister Agnesessa Kawa in Japan, I hope I'm pronouncing the last name right, and the apparitions of Our Lady to her, do anything, any of what Our Lady said to her does any of this figure into what's going on right now, you think?
My personal opinion, and I'll let Dr. Kengor respond too. I met Sister Agnes Hasegawa when I was filming my documentary, and I spoke to her about this. I think in 1973, when the Virgin appeared to her and gave her that very fateful message about a great fire that would fall from the sky and a large part of humanity being annihilated, it would be a chastisement, she said, worse than the deluge, worse than the flood of Noah. That's a frightening message. She says those who survive would envy the dead. This would happen unless we responded, unless we repented. That's 73, 81, in Quapa, Nicaragua, there was a young man who would become a future priest who had visions of the Mother God, foretold of a third world war. I think all of these things, if you look from 1917 all the way up, apparitions intensified, the warnings about fire falling from the sky, possible war from different places of the world, also increased, whether it's in Khrushchev or other places in the Ukraine itself. I believe John Paul II's consecration of March 25th, 1984, short-circuited all of that. It offset all of that. I think we were on a collision course for a war. In fact, Sister Lucia de Santos in 1985 actually said a nuclear war had been averted thanks to the consecration of John Paul II. So, Sister Agnes, prophecy, could it apply to today? It could. I really think it applied to the time in which it was given, and I think John Paul's consecration remedy that. However, as Dr. Kengor is pointing out as well, we could very easily enter a third world war, and we could very easily see the exchange of nuclear weapons in a very different reality. But, Doctor, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many of these. You know, obviously Faustina as well. I'm reading a book right now about a Calabrian nun named Sister Elena Aiello, who had some of these sort of prophecies. Yeah, I think she was born around 1895, died. Yeah. Maybe around 1961, stigmatist.
She's a blessed right now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So there's so many of these. Yeah, I would add to this, too. There's a fascinating commentary on the Third Secret of Fatima when it was divulged, May 13, 2000. And that commentary was written by the Cardinal for the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith, a fellow by the name of Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. Right. And he makes the point in there. He says, yeah, but won't people say that in the Third Secret of Fatima, the Pope dies when he's attacked, appears to die? And there, Ratzinger said, but that's the whole point of this. You know, God can intervene. Things can change, right? If people can intervene with their prayers. Okay. You're not necessarily restricted to a certain chronological set or series of events. And besides, the Third Secret predicted an attack on the Pope. I don't know how clear it is from the vision as to whether or not the Holy Father actually died, but he was definitely attacked in that Third Secret vision. So, these are all, there's just so much there, right? Yeah. And the nuance in this story and that story and this visionary. And like you said, Drew, too, there's a bunch of them out there today who are claiming to be having visions today. And I got to wonder if Francis is in communication with any of them. Yeah, I'd be surprised if the Vatican wasn't.
No, I feel the same way. And I can't speak to that definitively, but I'm sure that if heaven is communicating messages, he'd probably be the recipient of that through one of these seers. We have to talk about Blessed Aiello at some point in the future, because I think in her visions, and she's been approved, right? She's been beatified. She saw the Russian flag, I think, hanging over the Vatican or something along those lines, Russia making its way across Europe.
Yeah, something involving Russia invading. Yes, right.
So we'll look into it. Maybe we can talk about that at some point in the future. Hey, great job on your article. We linked over to it. I hope people will read it and follow Dr. Kengor. As you can check him out at Drew Mariani Show, John Paul II's Consecration of Russia. Check out his book, Pope and a President, The Devil and Karl Marx, two of the many great books he's written. Hey, Paul, thank you. Always great to talk with you. Have a great night and great day.
All right, Drew. Yep,
all right,
take care.
Dr. Paul Kengor, I'll pray the chaplet when I return. Stay with me.